This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One. Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
Our God, wonderful, magnificent, is He. Consider all the marvelous.
Hi, my name is Courtney Bradford. I am the curator of collections at the Mosaic Templars Cultural Center in Little Rock, Arkansas. And today we'll be talking about the Negro Motorist Green Book, the exhibition that comes from the Smithsonian, sponsored by ExxonMobil.
This is a traveling exhibit.
Yes, right. Sir.
And how long will it be here?
It'll be here until Sunday, August the 1st.
And then it goes to where?
It goes to California.
Oh. Let's go back in time. Tell us about the story of this building, its history.
Yes, sir. So the Mosaic Templars of America was founded in 1883 by John E. Bush and Chester Keats here in Little Rock. This structure that we're in is actually a reproduction of the original structure that was built in 1913 solely for the organization. Mm-hmm.
And the reason it burnt to the ground?
Yes. There were two homeless gentlemen that came, and they were trying to keep warm in our ballroom area. And they set a fire to keep warm, and then it engulfed the entire structure.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Today, it's a nonprofit organization?
It is a state institution. Okay. We do have a 501c3, which is our Friends of the Mosaic Templars organization. Mm-hmm. But we are ran by the state, and we do receive state funds.
So temporary, right now, you have the Green Book, which is very poignant. Mm-hmm. But that goes away, so now you have your back to baseline.
Yes.
What's the mission, and what are you communicating here?
Yes, so the mission of our organization is to preserve, interpret, and to celebrate the African-American history and culture in Arkansas.
So it goes beyond Little Rock.
Yeah. Yes, and that's one of the main things that we want to focus on is it's not just about Central Arkansas, Little Rock, Conway, Pine Bluff. There are so many other areas in Arkansas that are rich in African-American history, and we're wanting to catch all of that.
Okay. And did I hear right, you teach at a university?
I do teach at the University of Arkansas, Pulaski Technical College. I teach the Introduction to African American Studies.
But that's the big overarching story. It's not limited by any means to Arkansas or even the South.
Correct. But one thing I do like to emphasize as we're going throughout the entire history is I do like bringing in Arkansas components to kind of bring it back for my students to kind of see, oh, wow, there are pieces of our history that is in Arkansas and it's not just nationally known or internationally known.
Right. But it's a whole ethnicity and going back in time and following the roots back to Africa, through the Caribbean, and here, it blows my mind, and I know it does yours too, of how there's this legacy, even in the accent of people. I mean, I know a woman here in town, she works for the National Park Service, and when I first
Miss White.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I first met her, I just knew she was born and raised in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
She would know.
South Carolina, I believe.
I know, but she has
the accent.
This lilt of like Jamaican that's just.
I believe she's Gullah. Gullah accent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But once again, isn't that just chilling how that legacy through an oral sense is passed on
exactly
to this day.
That's amazing that you say that because this week in my class we are talking about oral history, the importance of telling one story, and we do start in Africa with the griots and the storytellers and how, you know, their sole job was to learn their tribe's history and so they could tell younger people and to train the next griot.
Right.
And so that's funny that that's actually what we're talking about this week is the importance of oral history.
Yeah.
Then I take it a step further and I challenge them to do their own, to seek oral histories through their family. And I have them do a family tree as well and talk about the importance of community and family. And then what happens after emancipation when people are, you know, dispersed in different plantations and they're wanting to find their family. And even now how difficult it is for African Americans to trace their genealogy. And so I do talk about that in my class. And it's very important to know your family history, whether it's through oral history. Like my grandmother used to always tell us stories about her parents and her grandparents. And that's something that I tell my son, too. I have to tell him stories about his great-grandparents mm-hmm. as well in order to keep that history going.
Yeah, but there is that risk, that fragility of oral history as a legacy and passing it down. Mm-hmm. So there has to be that drive and that need in your mind to write it down, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. One of my favorite books is somewhat of an oral history of a written oral history of a family, Cane River. It talks about Lalita Tatamy's, her family, and how she went and traced her lineage, and she created the story to continue telling the importance of her family and the things that they experienced as mm-hmm. well.
And talk about cuisine for a moment and kind of rewinding in time in that lineage of how mm-hmm. it stays and it's still mm-hmm. there and where it came from.
That's also very interesting because I do talk about slave food. Is slave food soul food? And I believe one of the things that one of the panels in the exhibition talks about souse mm-hmm. or hogshead cheese. And oftentimes enslaved people were only offered the scraps from whatever animal that was being eaten. And so what we just learned today that, you know, souse is many different parts of an animal put together. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes African-Americans still eat souse. Oftentimes African-Americans still eat chitlins, which was something that they would have been forced to eat,
right,
you know.
Right.
And so it's often question is, you know, the things that we eat now, what lineage does that have? Is this a part of, this is our post-slavery syndrome mm-hmm. that we continue to eat the things that, you know, our ancestors ate because they were forced to eat, even though we no longer have to eat those
right.
things? Like, do we still eat those things? Is this a part of our culture or is this a part of something else?
But I think anything, I mean, Hispanic culture too, mm-hmm. I mean, brains, mm-hmm, all kinds mm-hmm. of stuff. And yet there's an acculturation, you know, a familiarity. And then there's the artistry of the chef mm-hmm. that can make any part of the pig mm-hmm. or whatever taste tasty.
Tastes yeah. like the best thing you've ever had.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, I, like you, I think it's so fascinating where our food came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the food, and I also talk about architecture. Mm-hmm. Like in a lot of architecture designs, I'm not sure if you've seen images of a circle, and it kind of goes out almost like a backwards heart.
Uh-huh.
And you see this a lot in window architecture and in ironwork. Where I have seen it is in Ghana, in West Africa.
Oh, wow.
And
I love it.
It's a Sankofa symbol, you know, yeah. So that basically means to go back and to get. And so when I see this architecture, this design yeah. in architecture, I say this is West Africa. These are West Africans making this design, and mm-hmm. in 2001, we still see this in architecture today in Arkansas, of all places.
That's really cool. What a great legacy, huh?
Yes.
A continuity connection. Mm-hmm.
You just completely connect. And I said, wow, if I didn't know, if I had not been to West Africa myself, I would have never put the two things together. But when I see it, I know what that is when I see
That's
it.
That's really touching. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other aspects of your teaching that are most passionate and close to your heart, your mission?
Yes, I mean, African American studies is such a passion of mine. When I went to school, I majored in anthropology, African and African American studies. And so I went with it full force in my head to learn more about not only my own culture, but about cultures like African cultures that I did not know before.
Mm-hmm.
And with taking that information, I'm able to present that to my students. And they are so fascinated by things that they, one, could not have ever imagined or never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
But to bring those concepts to them, that makes me happy.
Right.
As long as I get that, I'm happy with
it. This is a little abstract, but again, going back in time and connecting mm-hmm. to the African continent and the peoples and culture there, and how that streams through and mm-hmm. weaves through today.
Exactly.
What are some of the most touching connections that you've observed?
I would say studying the transatlantic slave trade. It's one thing to read about it. Oftentimes, as Americans, we read a lot about the slave trade, but to actually go over and to touch the shackles that were on people, to sit in a room or in a space that hundreds of people have been inside of, and you can feel that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a smell that, even to this day, and it's been over 11 years, I can still smell what this dungeon smelt like, you know, and they kept that, they left it like that on purpose
mm-hmm.
because they wanted people to experience that when they walked in there.
Right.
Oftentimes, as Americans, you know, regardless of culture, we can't imagine those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to imagine those things, and I take that experience and I take it to my students
mm-hmm.
and I present it here as well as in the museum. your life is forever changed when you experience like the inhumanity that people faced, and just the strength that these people had to have in order to endure the things that they endured. And generations later, people are still enduring, but they still have the strength. And I see that woven through so much here in Arkansas.
There's a phrase I'm spacing on at the moment, but an overarching description that represents the journey, the coming mm-hmm. across. You remember?
Oh, the Middle Passage.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's almost too kind of mm-hmm. a word.
Yes.
Way too passive. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is. And you talk about the legacy. We know before bodies were dropped in the Caribbean, you know, sharks weren't really prone to eating people, mm-hmm. but when you're getting so used to bodies dropping in the water for whatever reason, either maybe one or two people might be sick mm-hmm. and the whole line of people are thrown into the ocean, or if people no longer wanting to be on the ship and not knowing what is coming, but knowing that they don't want that, and so then they commit suicide. And so the legacy of slavery is in the Caribbean, and we see it in the animals and the sharks as well. They're bloodthirsty because they've gotten so used to the bodies that would drop in this area.
And again, taking that one step forward, you make the journey, you're now in a new country, and you're forbidden from learning to write.
You don't know
and
anything.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. the miracle is how that story was preserved and passed on. Mm-hmm. Of that connectedness, and even the Middle mm-hmm. Passage journey itself. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you, as a historian, find that evidence to continue the story when it's all oral?
Oftentimes, I would say, sometimes there are little objects or little things that you can find mm-hmm. to connect the pieces. And so I look at it as kind of like a map. And so we can see history as a map, and we know that certain things happened. And so we can see there's certain countries, but within those little countries and little states, there are other little cities and things mm-hmm. that make up that entire story.
Right.
And so we can see a few objects, a few things like that, and kind of put an entire story mm-hmm. together. We can base that off of things that we already know. We can base that off of other sources as well.
There were people in the 1870s and 1880s post-slavery mm-hmm. who learned to ride,
mm-hmm.
did any of them write down their recollections and their interpretations?
Oh, yes, that's interesting you say that, because I do offer my students a piece within our text that does talk about people's experiences because they wrote them down. Uh-huh. And not only the experiences in slavery, there was one experience when they were on a slave ship. And I asked the question, I said, how accurate do you believe this is? And what would make it not accurate? Mm-hmm. Like, why would we question their story of what it was like to be on a slave ship? Mm-hmm. And so there are lots of sources like that where people have written their experiences down, and we do have them.
But what's interesting, going back in time, say here's a woman born in 1800. Mm-hmm. So she's a 15-year-old in 1815. But she's talking to grandma mm-hmm. who might have been born in 1740. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. So there is this amazing... Mm-hmm.
If you can keep up the story...
But mm-hmm. that closeness mm-hmm. to the 1700s is a lot closer mm-hmm. than anyone would imagine.
Anything that we have, right. Yeah. And that reminds me of Alex Haley. He stated that a lot of the things that he knew about his family is because he would sit on the porch and his great-grandmother would just tell it, just tell about, you know, them coming from Africa and things like that. And so that it goes back, like you said, the continuity. Having the story, knowing the story, mm-hmm. and continuing to tell the story, and that's how it will be told. That's how it will be told to people.
I'll give you an example. I knew a guy long gone who was born in 1900. As a little kid, he talked to a guy who, as a little kid, talked to George Washington.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's...
That's amazing.
I know, but that's the same mm-hmm. story with the woman born in 1800, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Yeah. I would love that. That is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one more favorite passion of your journey and your mission with teaching.
As always, is to inform. If my students can get anything out of me, mm-hmm. especially Sankofa, and that's one thing, you know, after I came back from Ghana, so many things came back to that. And it literally means to go back and to get. Mm-hmm. And I tell my students, if you don't know your past, you have no present, you have no future. And so that's what Sankofa is. And so I always let them know that, you know, it's an Adinkra symbol. It comes from Ghana and West Africa. But we can take that and we can incorporate that into our lives. We incorporate that in our class because I tell people, you know, we're going back. But we have to go back because if we don't, we might make the same mistakes again.
Yeah. Field trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Field trip. We got to go back. We got to go back in time. And, you know, pay homage and honor those ancestors and what they have done and what it meant for them to have that, those sayings, those go back and get, and Janame, which is except for God. So no one can judge me except for God. You know, these are things that they look towards, and I look towards them today as an African American. I look towards them, but I also give that to my students regardless of color and regardless of culture. I say, know your history so you have a present, so that you have a future.
Beat and rhythm and music, banjo, drum, deconstruct that and going back in time and your explorations.
The drums are so amazing. They're a cause for celebration in Africa. You know, sometimes, you know, drums can mean war. It can mean someone is coming. But they are used as a tool to celebrate. It could be used as a tool to warn people. You know, while we were there, we actually experienced what it was like if slave catchers were coming and what would happen and what people would do. And so that it was amazing to see that. But to encounter that and to say that, you know, I stood on top of this hill and people stood on top of this hill looking out to see if anyone was coming. And it's
that was the equivalent of the smoke signal in the Native American.
They stood up there and he would blow a horn down to the village and to tell people that they were coming. And so those experiences, and I'll tell everyone, if you have opportunity to go to Africa, I'll say even to Ghana, because they do have so many sites that you can see and that you could probably trace your lineage to. Even if you don't trace your lineage to Africa, like, this is such a moving site.
I bet things like 23andMe have been a game changer, huh?
Exactly. And then people say, oh, wow, we have family here and family there. And you can find those links to those cultures, and it might want actually make you want to look more into things that you've never thought about before. Yeah. And so that's why I say Africa is not just for African Americans or Africans. I believe it's for everyone to learn. There's something for everyone there. And once you get that experience, it's life changing. Like, your life will not be the same.
Yeah.
Will not be the same.
Yeah, and there's some surprises too. My wife discovered by accident when her daughter did it and said, Mom, it says my grandma isn't who you say it is.
Oh, no.
So my wife took it, and her dad is not her dad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I think that's the scary thing that people don't want to find. You might find something you don't want to know.
Yeah, never
when you
mind.
Take those tests, right, and you find something that's like, wow. I believe my sister, she took a DNA test, and then it was like a really small percentage that we were like from the Philippines. I said, well, who is that person? You know, where does that person come from? So it's very intriguing to be able to see where you come from and then kind of honor, you know, those places and those cultures as well.
That's so cool. Well, I could keep you all day. This has been wonderful.
Thank you
so much.
Thank
sharing.
You. Yeah. No, thank you. It has been a great honor.
My honor and pleasure. To learn more about your world. Websites, you know,
my world, the Mosaic Templars Culture Center,
.com.
We have a Facebook page, we have an Instagram page as well. I'm on Facebook and Instagram as well.
And how would somebody find you?
You could probably find me on LinkedIn, they'll look for Courtney Bradford.
Simple as that,
and they'll find me.
What a pleasure! Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Little Rock, Arkansas. We'll see you here.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolfe, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
It's just a waste of money. Come with me and stay with me and say you'll be my honey. And cornbread and butter beans and you cross the table. Eating beans and I'm making love as long as I am able. Hoeing corn and cotton too. And when the day is over, ride the mule and cut the fool and love begin all over.